This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by Quest Protein Bars. Quest Protein Bars are the only bars that aren't just candy in disguise. 20 grams of protein, only 4 grams of non-fiber carbs, no sugar or sugar alcohols used, no junk food of any kind, and they're delicious. You can check them out and get 2 free bars at questproteinbar.com/FitCast. This week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 209. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Lee Peel of LeePeel.com. What's up, Lee?
Sometimes I want to interrupt you and just say it for you. I feel like it's Lee Peel.
You want me to say your name, Lee?
No. Yes. I do. And moving on.
So we got a great show lined up for you this week. Of course, we were not around last week. There was a Perform Better Summit, or the Perform Better One Day, up here in Boston, Massachusetts, at the Reggie Lewis Center. So I was there for the most of the day. And then when we got back, you know, we had trouble connecting, and I was very tired. So we had no podcast last week, but for people who want to know about the seminar, it was a good seminar. We had, I should be able to remember the presenters. Mike actually did a great talk. Now I'm going to sound a little bit biased, but Mike did a great talk on success secrets. And obviously when you're in a room with 150 trainers, for the most part, that pretty much killed. And we actually filmed it, and it's up on, or will be up on, Body by Boyle online eventually. So another reason to join up. Always got to be selling, Lee. Always closing, right?
Always.
So you can check that out. And also, Todd Durkin was there again. He did the same talk as last year, unfortunately, which was kind of a bummer.
I know. It was just the way you said it. It was just kind of funny, especially considering the talk he gave you last year. Wasn't it on motivation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know. They got to make sure they get on top of that. And then along with that was Brett Jones, who also talked about some kettlebell stuff. And I should know who. Someone else talked. I forget, though. I should know.
It was obviously riveting.
Yeah, I can't find the thing. So it was pretty good. We'll be at the Perform Better Summit come June, the first week of June. So if you're going to be coming to that, make sure to say hi. We're going to go get, crazy drunk at the on protein shakes. I'm going to be bringing a 10-pack of pure protein shakes.
I mean, knocking back some shots of those branch chain amino acids.
Yeah, we're just going to bring ice for everyone. This is going to be like, we're going to have that shot song. Anyways, in terms of real stuff that's going on, we're going to be doing a live call-in show next week at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, that's going to be on Sunday at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to be doing it. Looks like we're going to be doing it through TalkShoe. So we're going to be posting a link for that all over the place. Look for it on Lee and Mai's Facebook, John's Facebook, on Twitter. And I'll probably post something about it on the fitcast.com. But keep an eye out for that. And literally what you're going to be able to do is call into the show and ask your questions live. And I don't want you guys to be shy or nervous or anything like that. Just call in. We really want this to be a big event. Call in. You can ask about anything. Please, keep it within the realm of fitness and nutrition and rehab if that's possible. But I'm really looking forward to doing it. And my goal here is to see if we can raise money. And what I would like to do for the people that are going to call in is do a simple system of, donate $5 or more to the Red Cross or to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Then you will simply forward the receipt that you get to me at kevin@thefitcast.com. And I'll have all this information while we start up the live show, and we'll have links for all the things to do it. It's very simple. I mean, it's very easy to donate, money to both organizations. And then what I will do is then give you access to call in, and then you can talk to us live. Like, again, you can ask us whatever. You can just say, hey, I just wanted to talk to you guys, whatever you want to do. So this is your chance to do it. It's going to be again next Sunday at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Look for more information. And I really kind of asked you guys to help out for the Japan relief last episode. I really love you guys to step it up this upcoming weekend and see if we can do something really good with the audience that we have. And you know, I've talked about in the past, we got about 6,500 listeners. If we can get, you know, just 50 or 100 to show up and then get another, you know, 15 or 20 to donate $5, it would have been worth it. And like I, you know, like I said, it's something that I really love to do. And trust me, I will jump in myself and donate some money, you know, just to show my support as well. And I think John is going to be donating like a brick of gold or something.
Are we going to be able to see how many people are there?
Yeah.
Then how about we up the ante and say that I will donate $1 for every person that pops up?
Yeah, I'll do the same. Yeah, I'll do the same. So let's do that. So now you get to send it to all your friends and make it so I can't buy a house.
Yeah, make us broke.
Yeah. So that should be a lot of fun. And another cool thing is I snuck up on you guys this week, but I actually sent out an email to a bunch of different people because I got someone on Twitter, and I'm not even going to say your name because it's a name that it's like, I'm probably going to ruin it. But he had a question on increasing number of chin-ups that you can do. So he wanted to add as many reps as possible to pull-ups or bar dips. But I changed it to chin-ups because I think that's going to be the most applicable to our audience. So I sent that out to a bunch of trainers and coaches. And I think we got like 6 answers back from guys like Mike Boyle, Chad Waterbury, Nick Tuminello. I forget who all sent it in, but you'll be hearing that in, you know, at the end of the show. So that's cool. And we're going to do some more of that. I apologize that it didn't work out the first time that I tried to do it, but I tend to try to do too many things at once sometimes. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I'll make sure we got it going this week.
Now, is this the ultimate answer? Is that what you're talking about?
The ultimate answer.
Okay. See? You should give this stuff a title.
I did.
You knew, but we didn't know, as in the audience listening to you. Let me just specify this so people, it'll be clear. A guy on Twitter asked you a question.
Yeah, I did.
And you messaged all these awesome coaches and fitness professionals and ask them what their thoughts were on that question, and it's going to play at the end of this call.
Yeah, they called in. They called in to 775-45-FITCAST, which is our voicemail box.
That is excellent.
And it's based in Las Vegas, where I live. So
I just wanted to make sure that was pimped in a manner that it was deserved to be pimped. Ultimate answer. Got it.
Done. And I forgot to mention, I watched Revolver last night, a Jason Statham movie, which I had not seen until last night. It's a Guy Ritchie film, too. Written and directed. It's a messed up movie.
That was disturbing, right? That movie?
No, not really.
No?
No, it was just weird. It's like a, you know,
thinking
it's
of
a thing. It's a thinking movie.
Okay.
If you can
Wrong,
make
maybe.
If you can make a Jason Statham movie about thinking. all right. Well, that's it for the news. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back to talk about continue our discussion on programming for strength, and we're also going to hit on the nutrition aspect too. Be right back. All right, guys, here comes the ultimate answer for this week, where we ask a bunch of different strength coaches and trainers one question, and we get their answer. If you have a question that you want to submit, you can send it to questions@thefitcast.com. Please put the ultimate answer in the subject line.
Hey, it's Coach Nick Tuminello. I want to answer the question in regards to how to improve somebody's maximum body weight chin-ups from 15 to 30 repetitions. Pretty basic, 2 things. Number one, chin-ups have to do directly with relative strength, since we're talking about body weight. So the more you can make your body weight, the better your chin-ups are, or the easier your chin-ups are going to be. So the first thing I would tell this person is we would do a body fat percentage, and if they were over you know, I would say over 12 to 13, 14%, we would definitely try to get them down a little bit leaner, basically drop some weight. That's pretty low for the average guy. So basically getting leaner, weight loss, fat loss more specifically, would be definitely very, very important. I also would look to have this person get a chin-up bar in their house, and I would tell them pretty much anytime they walk by that chin-up bar to do a bunch of chin-ups. I wouldn't tell them to necessarily do as many as possible, but I would tell them to go just before fatigue very, very often. I know that sounds like a lot of volume and maybe a little different than what some of the coaches are going to be talking about with specific sets and reps and percentages of 1RM and all these different things. Nothing wrong with that, but getting stronger in any movement has to do with two things. There's a physiological aspect to it, which is adding muscle, and there's a neurological aspect to it, which is basically teaching your brain the motor pattern. Physiological strength is going to come from lots of volume, basically building the muscular and tendon strength. So you're going to get a lot of volume by doing lots of chin-ups, and motor learning is going to come from doing lots of repetitions of chin-ups. So that kind of covers both solutions. So if that is a big goal of someone to really get their chin-ups up fast, that would be one of the best things I would tell them, to do it as fast as possible, get a chin-up bar, and every time you walk by that chin-up bar, try to hammer out a set of chin-ups. You probably end up banging out 100 plus a day. In a few weeks, definitely a month time, you will definitely have your chin-ups up. And I didn't just make that up. We've had a couple clients try that, and it's worked well. And I've also learned many other folks have done that as well. It's a very old school, very simple way to do things, but it's definitely kind of battle tested. All right, this is Nick Terminello from NickTerminello.com. And that's what I would do if someone really was desperate to increase their body weight chin-ups from 15 to 30 repetitions. Thanks.
Hi, this is Brett Contreras from BrettContreras.com. And to answer the question about how I would increase someone's maximum body weight chin-ups from 15 to 30 reps, here's what I do. I'd actually stay away from using weight, doing weighted chin-ups, or using bands for assisted chin-ups. I wouldn't tinker with any of the loading. I just stick to body weight. And what I do is I do chin-ups three different times a day. But I'd stay away from going to failure. So let's say right now I can do 15. I would do like three sets of 12 every day of the first week. But I'd switch up, you know, I'd be switching up grip with, so that's about all I do. I do supinated, maybe early in the day, and then maybe pronated, and then maybe neutral grip, just because those seem to, you know, feed off of each other and be synergistic. And then every week I just work on bringing up the amount of total number of chin-ups I do. So maybe the next week I try for, you know, 13 or 14. You know, and then 15, and then, you know, eventually I'd be doing three sets of 20 every single day. And then at that point, if I could do three sets of 20 three times a day, I'm pretty sure that I could do one set of 30 reps. So anyway, I'd stick to body weight. I wouldn't introduce load or bands or anything crazy like that. And I just do it very, very frequently while staying away from going to failure, so I could do it more frequently. I think that would get you to reach the goal as quickly as possible. All right, hope that helps. Thanks.
Hey, this is Michael Boyle from StrengthCoach.com and Body by Boyle Online. What I would do, basically we're talking about the idea of increasing somebody's maximum number of chin-up reps. The big thing that we have had great success with is, I guess, two-part. One, doing strength work. When we're doing strength work on the bench press, we're doing strength work, whether it's in the pull-up, whether it's chin-up. Generally, it tends to be chin-up. So we'll be doing heavy triples, heavy doubles, heavy sets of five, weighted. If you come in our gym, you will see our athletes. A lot of times, you'll see our female athletes with weight on the chin-up doing low-rep work to try to really develop their strength. I think you can't really have endurance if you don't have strength, obviously. If you can't do one pull-up, you're not going to do 10. And at the same way, I think if you can't do, say, 5 to 45, you're probably never going to do 15 to 20. So we've got to be able to develop that strength first.
Hey, this is Chad Waterbury from ChadWaterbury.com and author of Huge in a Hurry. Okay, here's what I do to go from 15 to 30 straight pull-ups. So use a high-frequency training plan to train the pull-up twice each day, in the morning and in the evening, at least 6 hours apart. You'll do no other upper back work in your main workouts. No heavy pull-ups, no rows, no nothing. This takes the place of everything. So on the first day, let's say you start on Monday, on the first day, you're going to do 15 reps of full pull-ups in the morning, just one set. And then in the evening, 6 or more hours later, you're going to do an exercise from the full hang position. So you're going to start with your arms fully extended, and then you're just going to pull your shoulder blades together and down. So there's no real arm movement. Basically, your body just lifts a couple inches as you pull your shoulder blades together, and you'll do 15 reps of that. And just do them as fast as you can with good form. So in the morning on Monday, you do 15 full pull-ups. In the evening, you do 15 reps of the shoulder blade pull from the full hang position. Then on Tuesday, you're going to do 16 reps of the full pull-up. Now, you might have some fatigue from the day before. The key is to do 16 reps, and they don't have to all be full reps, because you're going to add a rep each day, even if they're not a full rep, because you're training your nervous system to just do more reps. So the morning of Tuesday, the second day that's playing, you'll do 16 reps of the pull-up. Let's say you just get 14 full reps and two partial reps, that's fine. Then in the evening, you'll do 16 reps of the shoulder blade pull from the full hang position. Then on Wednesday, you'll do 17 of each exercise. And you'll continue with this for 6 days, and you'll take the seventh day off. Be sure you get plenty of soft tissue work done on the back of your shoulder, your teres minor, your lats, your posterior deltoid, because they'll get really sore from this. It's important to keep that healthy. And then you'll continue with this until you get 30 reps of the pull-up in the morning, and many will be partial reps. Just go fast. And then 30 shoulder blade pulls from the full hang position at night. Then you'll take 3 full days off. Then you'll start doing one set of max pull-ups every day. Now, you'll probably be in the mid-20s by this point. So let's say the first day of this, after taking 3 days off, you get 25 full pull-ups. You just do one set. The next day, try to get 26. And then just keep trying to add a rep each day until you hit 30. It should just take about another week. So this should take about 4 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks, to get you from 15 to 30 straight pull-ups. And if you want more information, visit my blog at chadwaterbury.com.
I just wanted to personally thank those guys for calling in, and we hope to do more segments like this, so hopefully you'll see more down the line.
All right, we're here for the continued discussion on program design for strength training, and we're going to kind of break it apart right here. And what I'd like to take this time for is to talk to our resident expert on all things nutrition, and that is Lee Peel. So, you know, Lee, I obviously you have clients yourself that have primary goals of getting stronger. You know, what do you tend to talk to them about or recommend or discuss when it comes to the nutritional component?
What I usually get is I get a lot of clients who are hard gainers in strength. That happens frequently for me. I think one of the interesting thing about strength training, and I think this is a good spot to interject it, is that when it comes to, muscle gain, there's a lot of room for science to pick things apart, because it's such a very physically technical thing, how we build muscle and how we break things down, tear, rebuild energy sources, etc. But when it comes to strength, there's also a lot of mental aspects of it. There can be a lot of psyching out, and I think in some ways that strength is one of the most psychologically interesting aspects of training that you can really get into. Not that you don't need a certain level of strength gain to build muscle or etc., but when you're really trying to reach like the next level of strength. And I get a lot of times, or oftentimes, I get a lot of strength hard gainers, if you will, coming in and talking to me, because one of the biggest problems that they face is a lot of people, and you see this often, is a lot of people got into lifting weights or a lot of people start lifting weights for more vanity reasons. They perhaps got into it to lose fat in the first place or to gain muscle to look, you know, more chiseled or whatnot. And the strength component can be kind of secondary. Now, I'm not sure exactly what you guys talked about prior, but I'm going to assume that you probably discussed strength on a level of athleticism and strength on a level of absolute or maximum strength or something to that degree.
Mostly maximum strength. We didn't get into athleticism too much because I think that's a whole nother category.
Okay. All right. So it was just basic maximum strength and improving that. And with improving maximum strength, I find that one of the most common problems nutritionally that I face is that people don't eat enough for maximum strength. I see that is generally a common problem. So what I usually tell my clients is the very first thing that you can do with any sort of goal that you have, especially when you're involved in nutrition, is to figure out where your target caloric intake goals are going to be. This can get more and more confusing in the world of nutrition because you have so many different camps of nutritional philosophies. You have so many people that believe you shouldn't be eating certain things, or you know, vegetarianism is the only way to go, or paleo is the only way to go, etc. And so beyond just caloric intake, there becomes all the somewhat religious dogma that surrounds nutrition that can become problematic. I'm going to ignore that for the entire conversation of this episode, and I'm going to stick to the bare basics, which is simply the fact that in order for you to expend energy, you need energy. Mm-hmm. And in order to gain recovery, you need energy for recovery. And that is absolute, indisputable fact that you are going to need your days of caloric expenditure to equal what it is that you expend, which means that calories do count and caloric intake counts. So rather than try and getting to some sort of debate about that, if we're sticking into simplistics, one of the first things that I tell people to do is to try and figure out some sort of caloric target that they have for their day. Now, caloric targets aren't static. They change from day to day on a base to base. So I like using some sort of RMR calculator. There's different ones. One of the easiest ones to work with is the Harris-Benedict formula. You can type that in, Harris-Benedict formula, and reach it to calculator. Have there been lots of studies that look at other calculations and then people take into account lean mass and whatnot? Yes. But the problems that all these calculations run into account with is not so much the issue of getting the correct resting metabolic rate, but more so getting the correct activity factor. What happens is you get your resting metabolic rate, which is bed rest, if you're in coma, if you didn't move all day, what you need to live and to give some sort of supply and demand to your body. That's what you need just to survive. You get that rate, and then you times that rate by some sort of activity factor. So let's say your resting metabolic rate is somewhere around 1600 calories, and you work in an office all day, and you train for an hour a day, maybe an hour and a half completely at the gym, and you do some general household work, etc. You will not have a very high activity factor because most of your day is spent sitting. It's spent not doing much. You have very intermittent activity. So your activity factor would be somewhat low. Even if you exercise multiple times a week, you still have a pretty low activity factor. That's one of the areas that people get tripped up with activity factors, because if you look at the formulas, they always say, do you exercise 5 to 6 times a week? And you'll be like, oh, yes. And it's like, well, you have a 1.5 or 1.6 activity factor. But as we see, looking at activity, it is a lot more than just exercising. It's everything from if you walk to work or if you drive to work, or what your job is, if it's standing, sitting, etc. So trying to nail down your activity factor and what kind of caloric intake you need is very important for making sure that you're getting enough nutrients and you're getting enough caloric intake in order to actually build and repair for what you need for your strength activity. So that's number one. Goal number one is to figure that out for you. There are also other formulas. People like to do body weights times certain numbers. For example, they usually say that body weights times 15 to 17 range-ish is good for strength numbers. So if you weighed 180 pounds, you could times that by 15 to 17, and you would get your daily caloric needs for the day. Very simple. It's something that people use. I find that it can be well generally, But to me, getting true optimization is looking at your actual lifestyle. And your actual lifestyle is activity. Activity meaning that you're going to get better numbers. You could do day to day and say, okay, one day my activity is this, the next my activity is that, and give yourself different numbers for each day. It can get a little overly detailed and involved, but if you're someone that likes that, that's great. Or what you can do, and what I recommend for people to keep it as easy as possible, is to simply just do overall general average of what the week would look like, and you'll land somewhere in your zone, especially if you're not worried about fat loss and you're worried about just maintenance, or maybe even perhaps a slight surplus. It's more than adequate enough. As far as meal frequency goes and meal timing, this is where it can get kind of interesting. I'm not a proponent of the dogma of multiple meals for meal timing. We've looked at research time and time again, and there's no sort of real metabolic advantage to meal timing per se. But especially when you're trying to eat at maintenance or even a slight surplus, which, if I need to reiterate again, is best for making strength gains, then sometimes eating that much food, especially if you're getting into a larger meal category, is hard. And it's easier to break up those meals. It's just simply easier to eat the food that you need to eat, broken up in between meals. So I always say, when it comes to meal timing and frequency, don't so much be caught up with what gives you some sort of crazy advantage or muscle growth advantage or protein synthesis or anything like that. Be more concerned with what you can actually comply to and how you can get the food in. If eating 5 meals a day allows you to get the food in that you need and the recovery that you need, great. But if you can chow everything down in 2 or 3 meals, then that's fine too. More of what you're looking for is compliance and nutritional compliance and getting it in. In a macro sense, when we look at macronutrients for strength or mass gain, you always want to make sure you're getting your minimal needs. Now, minimal needs, and this is in the sense of the USDA, FDA, RDA, all the type things. When you look at combined of their research, the general recommendation is somewhere between 0.8 grams to 1.0 grams in your weight in pounds. On the higher end of these levels, you can even see it as high as 1.2 to 1.4. It really depends on your level of experience, and that's where it can get kind of tricky with how much protein that you need if you're a woman, how old you are, etc. I think starting at the 1 gram area and then moving upwards is a very safe place to start. And again, these are minimums. These are minimums. If you'd like to pack on more, you can. But at a point, there's only so much protein that is going to help you do anything. And getting overly protein obsessed and thinking that you have to get crazy percentages is not necessary. A lot of people don't think that carbohydrates are essential, but I've talked about time and time again that they are very much essential in the aspect of strength and body composition, and definitely needed for vitamin intake, etc. We need a certain level of inflammation. We need a certain level of shuttling into the system in order to achieve our gains and to recover. So carbohydrates do play a role. Absolutely. Your minimums would be 0.5 grams, your weight in pounds. And that's a very low level of intake, but that would be your minimum. And there would be a certain degree of that would have to do with starch-based carbohydrates. If you want to put them around your workout only, to maximize partitioning, you can do that. And I don't think that there's any problem with having a higher level of carbohydrate intake. In fact, I think that if you look at a lot of research, regardless of low-carb advocates, there's really a lot of great use for carbohydrates in strength training and in mass building in general. So with fat intake, you're looking at somewhere between 0.3 to 0.4 grams. That would cover your minimum essential fatty acids. And you to throw in a little bit more with that with fish oil. You could include fish oil into your fat intake, or you can just look at meal intake. I always say look at meal intake first. Try and get what you can from your meals, because the absorption is going to be much better than that. You take a lot of fat without having a general good fat intake with your actual nutrients, and sometimes you can have absorption issues. The highest level really would be 10 1-gram capsules. I don't really see any need above that unless you have any sort of condition. Most people, especially at a maintenance or surplus range, you should be getting a variety in your diet. 3 to 6 whole capsules should be fine in that kind of a sense, and you should be good to go there. So that kind of breaks down what you're looking at for caloric intake and for macronutrients.
What about fruit?
Like
because that's what's making our kids obese these days.
Wow, really?
No, we don't have to get that.
Okay, because I don't.
But what about, you know, one thing that we do get asked a lot on the podcast is post-workout nutrition. And I don't know. And one of the big things is like, oh my God, like, you know, should I have fructose or dextrose? You know, what's the deal?
Yeah, sure.
What's the deal with that?
Generally, let's say if you asked me this question 3-4 years ago, I would probably give you a generalized spiel of saying, well, you want a certain amount of dextrose and
did this a couple years ago. I remember.
Maybe we did. Yeah. And that would have been my answer is that, you know, a certain level of this, and this is for wanking optimization anyway, but, because liver glycogen fills with, you know, fructose and muscle glycogen, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing that we're seeing, in recent research, and you can see this common thread in a lot of people that look at the research as it comes out. Alan Argon is one great example, that over time we're just seeing that it's just not, as long as you're getting an optimal intake of nutrients throughout the day, the timing of those nutrients and when you take it in just doesn't seem to be that relevant for optimal protein synthesis. And I think one of the reasons that we're seeing that it's not as important is because when you're eating at maintenance or when you're eating at a surplus, just simply a normal meal takes roughly 6 to 7 hours to digest. That's on any sort of a larger level. Now, when we're talking about fat loss, it can be a different story, not largely, but it can be a different story. When we're talking maintenance and surplus, by the time you get to your workout, if you're eating at maintenance or surplus, you still have fuel transporting through your body that hasn't even gone into storage yet, meaning that you're not operating off of your stores. When you get into training, when you're in the training session, you are going to pull from your muscle glycogen for energy. You're going to pull from both storage and circulating fuel. The general conversation or belief is that we need to replace it as soon as possible, that the moment that it gets taken out, that we need to replenish it. I don't think that it's bad to focus on that. I think that it's a good thing to say, okay, I worked hard, let me feed it, especially for people that are perhaps dealing with sugar stabilization issues, you know, in anyone who's dealing with insulin resistance or prediabetes or especially someone who's diabetic. But I think what you're going to see more time, and especially as the research comes out, is that as long as you fit a meal within a few an hour or two of that window, a solid meal, that you're going to be fine, that it probably isn't going to make much of a difference in the sense of actual protein recovery level, your gains, your strength gains or whatnot. What I have a thought and what many have a thought about is that there's a difference between actual protein recovery or rebuilding that takes place versus insulin issues, how you feel in your body and your actual like shaking, being worn down, energy recovery, the ability to kind of, I guess, move on with your day, if that makes sense, to be able to function after putting yourself through such strain. And if we're talking about strength training in a sense of perhaps, you know, maximum effort cycling or, you know, rotations between, you know, higher volumes or lower volume or decreasing whatnot, it's very taxing to the body. So I think to say, don't worry about post-workout nutrition, I think that that's taking it too far in the other direction. I think not being freaked out and trying to be concerned about, oh, I got to get my dextrose this, and I got to make sure it's a split of both the casein and the whey, and getting just really overly analytical with what you're taking in a post-workout nutrition sense is taking it too far and really not necessary if you're having a balanced macro intake. But I think looking at it in the aspect of, okay, general guidelines, let's make sure that you're having somewhere between 15 to 30 grams of protein intake 15 grams of carbohydrates, maybe like 1 or 2 grams of fat, call it a day and then have a meal, I think you're fine. If you have anything pre-workout, you're fine. And it's more focusing on the whole food nutrition in that aspect. I mean, I could throw out some numbers that are simply talking about, well, if we're in a lab and we're trying to get to ultimate optimization, sure, I could throw out some hypotheticals. It hasn't been tested. It's completely just pulling numbers out for the sake of trying to not sound smart, but trying to make a lab rat out of people who are just trying to get in their normal workouts, I guess. And I don't think that that's necessary. And these are general guidelines. So for general guidelines, you need to eat something a couple hours at least before you work out, and need to eat something following your workout. And I think to feel best, I think that personally it's good to drink on a shake post-workout or some sort of liquid nutrition. Milk is great. Chocolate milk. If you have dairy issues, though, there's other kinds of milk. There's almond milk and stuff like that. I think it's good to drink on those kind of things and perhaps have a little extra protein supplement there to maximize recovery. And I think that you're going to see that it's going to provide good for you and in focusing on the whole meal. So I know it's a little bit of a ramble, but we do get so caught up with post and pre-workout nutrition. I think that it's, especially if you're eating in maintenance or surplus, that it's taking it to a level that does not need to be at all. I just watched, funny enough, I was watching something on Discovery Channel that is called Superhumans or Superhuman Beings or whatever, and it had the guy who's classically, he had his meals broken up in between, you know, 5 to 6 meals a day, fish in a Tupperware. And I think there's a level of that is just certainly not needed when you're eating at maintenance. When you're talking about fat loss, I think that there's a little bit more room for a little bit of intellectual debate on the issues. But I think definitely in maintenance that you stick to those guidelines, you'll be fine.
Cool.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So beyond that, to knock it out a little bit quicker, I just to talk about a few supplements. There's a lot of supplementation that gets talked about with strength gains, and usually strength gain and mass. I don't know if we're going to do a mass segment with this, Kevin, but usually with strength and mass gains, it's the same type of supplement conversations anyway, like the No Explode and different types of those things.
Yeah, how much of that should I take?
I wouldn't really bother with it.
2 scoops, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. 5, never in orange juice, of course, though, because the fructose destroys it. But
no shit.
Oh, yeah, God. I know. It's a shame.
All right.
But generally speaking, the only supplements you really need to worry about, food. Amazing supplements. It does it incredible things that food does. It does. I recommend 100% intake of food daily, really. Aside from food, I do think that there's a lot to look at with the use and dosage of creatine. And I'll give a brief rundown. I did an article. You can read my complete rundown of dosing and why, and about being, if you're a responder, not a responder, if you're a woman and afraid to take it, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to give the general gist of it, though. But you can type in creatine lead pill in Google. It'll pull it up. Basically, creatine monohydrate is what you're looking to get into. Loading is a general area for conversation or debate. Technically, you do not need to load, but you can if you so desire. Basically, what you can do, though, is you can start to take a dosage recommendation of if you want a fast to faster intake is how I lay it out. But a fast intake or loading level for saturation, you're going to get around 5 grams, 20 days, and then switch to 5 grams per day. And again, this is if you even want to bother with loading. The reason that loading is not necessarily an issue is because we create, the creatine is actually a natural thing. So when you start taking it, basically you're trying to hit peak saturation. And what that means is you're just trying to max out what you carry in your body. That's all you're trying to do. And then you're trying to maintain those levels of saturation and you take it daily. So that's what loading is, essentially. Some people believe in loading and swear by it. others do not. In research, we see that it's really not that necessary. But if you so desire to load, you can do it in fast manners, which is take roughly 20 grams for like 5 days, and then you'll probably hit peak saturation, and then you'll just keep taking around 5 grams per day. Or you can do it slower and do about 5 grams for 20 days. Now, sometimes people who try and do it fast and hit peak saturation on a quick level can start to experience diarrhea or very fun events while they're lifting, and it can be problematic. If you're nervous about something like that happening, you might just want to take it slow. You can just start taking 5 grams per day, and in about 15 to 20 days, you're going to get to peak saturation, and you just keep taking 5 grams a day. Some people may or may not be responders simply because in a surplus or maintenance, they already are kind of at peak levels, especially if they're very heavy meat eaters. It's going to give you a lot more creatine in your body. If you eat a lot of meat and veggies, like if you're a very big meat and veggies kind of lifter, then and you're a big guy in general, then it's probably not even going to be an issue, but you can take it anyway. So there's nothing really dangerous about it. We only see really positive benefits unless you overuse it or try and do something stupid. You can hurt yourself with water, so you can certainly hurt yourself with creatine. Then I don't really see any problems. And it's one of those things where I always say it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to try. It doesn't seem to hurt to try. Other than that, there's always protein supplements. Protein powders, whatnot. Again, worrying about whey versus casein, like slow digestion or what have you, I don't think is really necessary to get into. I'll leave it at that. Go with taste and quality. It's not even so much profile as it is quality. I think that anyone who's, I've probably tried every single protein powder known to man, and you can definitely tell the difference between quality of protein powders by how they make you feel, by how they digest, and by how they taste. So go for quality protein powders. If you have to pay a little bit more, so be it. And then branched-chain amino acids, I get asked that a lot. You really likely aren't running into a problem because you're eating at maintenance or a surplus. You're probably getting what you need. If you want to take it just to be on the safe side, that's fine. But you're probably getting all the branched-chain amino acids you need through your protein supplements or through your meats. And then there's a general multivitamin, which I always suggest to take. Probably want to avoid anything that has a root or an extract or a seed listed in the label. So that's weird anyway. Some good things can come from it, but generally speaking, weird stuff that can come from it. I think that's it. That's what I wrote down. And unless Kevin wants me to focus on anything else.
I got something for you.
Okay.
Well, because I know we're going to get this question. And okay. It is, it's one of those questions that we get a lot. But all right, say you're and unfortunately, I don't think we talked about this too much for the fat loss thing. But, you're training someone. What would be the optimal meal that you would ask them? You said obviously chocolate milk. Is a good option. Is there any other meal, that someone could replicate that you would recommend?
Post. I'm going to try and give a general answer.
Oh, yeah.
I would say to a client, it would depend on what you had beforehand, to be perfectly honest with you. And the reason I would say this is because a lot of, like, let's say you're following, I'm not going to name any names, but let's say you're following someone's doctrine in which they say, don't eat any carbs until post-workout. Mm-hmm. Well, then you're going to need carbs.
Okay.
You're going to need carbs post-workout. And that's where I said it can get kind of confusing when you're looking at particular dogmas or stereotypes. I do 100% believe that if you're restrictive of carbohydrates at all in your day, and this is in fat loss or in mass gains, that be it whatever type of carb that you believe in, like maybe you don't eat processed carbs or you're not a fan of that, like you're a paleolithic type dieter, then you would want to make sure that you have sweet potatoes, some sort of starch-based carbohydrate after your workout section. Essentially, what you're trying to do after your post-workout is recover. You're trying to recover in the sense of muscle repair. You're trying to send basically your nutrients as fast as you can in the body. That's what insulin does. It's what it's going to do in that situation. You need an insulinic surge because it's a delivery. It's a transporter. So you want that transporter.
Transporter.
Yeah, that's right. I snuck that in just for you. It's basically insulin is Jason Statham. Okay. And protein is the hot Chinese girl in the trunk.
Thank you for finding a name for this episode.
Yeah. And so that's essentially you want insulin. And also when it comes to building muscle or building strength, and this should be said, is that you want a degree of inflammation, even though we're so against it. And we're, oh, inflammation's bad. You don't want inflammation. You never want inflammation. To a degree, you do. In fact, we see that that hindering inflammation on a large level can be bad. There's lots of studies that have to do with antioxidant usage and with certain over-the-counter medications that could maybe lend to a potential detriment of growth. And recover, because you need to break down on a certain level to then rebuild. It's just what it is. So insulin's good on all those types of level. Carb phobic and mass and strength gains, just a match I do not think it makes. So I think making sure to shuttle in a whole meal as soon as you can post workout is the best thing to do. And we're talking at, if you're going to have your heftiest meal of the day, have it post workout. Absolutely. If you say, take part in any sort of intermittent fasting or small breakfasts, large dinners, whatnot, then save your biggest meal for after your post workout. Cause it's definitely, you're going to have best insulin sensitivity. You're going to have, best uptake of nutrients. It's just smart. It's just smart to do it that way. There's no argument about that. But if you need something on a quick level, then something that has a good ratio of protein and carbohydrates in it. You want enough carbohydrates to provide an insulinic surge, and then enough protein to provide recovery. Some people argue with a 1-to-1 ratio or a 2-to-1 ratio. I personally like a 2-to-1 ratio. I don't really think that there's a problem with a lot of crashing unless you're someone that overly restricts carbohydrates. And then, yeah, you could have a post hypoglycemic crash. It could happen. If you restrict carbohydrates, train, and then try and take in a lot of carbohydrates, you're probably not going to feel that good. So you might want to keep the carbohydrates a little backed up a little bit. I don't recommend training that way in general because that's what happens. But if that's what you do, then you may want to make your ratio a little bit more even, 1-to-1. So it would be like 15-15. But if you generally aren't afraid of carbohydrates and you keep them in your system a lot, then you can go 2-to-1. So it'd be more like 30-15 in a gram sense. And I'm just using these numbers because they're really easy for people to take in. It doesn't have to be exactly 30 grams, 15 protein. If you're like a really big guy, and you're really trying to work on your strength building, and you're trying to hit out like 800 numbers or 700s and in squats and things like that, you're really going up there, then that's laughable to think that 15 grams is something that you intake. So, you know, for him, it may be more 45 or higher in the protein level. But so obviously you have to look at it based upon that scale, but that's the ratio of 1-to-1, 2-to-1. So I would say if you restrict carbohydrates, or if you're in generally a lower carbohydrate diet type person for whatever reason, then you're probably going to look at more of a 1-to-1 ratio. If you don't restrict carbohydrates, then you're probably looking at more of a 2-to-1 ratio. And that's just, you know, the sense of feeling good. And then a larger meal following an hour to an hour and a half, if you can, after your training session. The intake of the protein drink or whatnot is kind of like your first, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like first base, first, second base, if you will. It kind of gets you warmed up, but yeah, the meal, that's the home run. That's the big finale.
Where it really goes down.
Yeah. That's where the magic happens. Really is. So,
in cribs now. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I think you're going to be looking at. And that's kind of the window time frame.
Love it. I think we're gonna kind of wrap it up there, and because we are roughly at an hour, and I'm gonna cook myself some dinner.
Asparagus.
Yeah, it's some adventure in asparagus. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. No, Lee, give me your take. See, this is what I want to do. The first time I had it was, my ex-girlfriend cooked it for me, and she baked it in the oven, basically put it on like a tray and spray, put a little olive oil spray on there, a little bit of sea salt, and then put it in the oven. I had some people say like 500 degrees for like 10 minutes. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. Yeah. I mean, if you're really trying hot. To do it, that's if you're doing it quick.
Is it better to do it slow?
You're bringing up a whole truckload of cooking arguments.
You know what I would love to, and I was like saying this, I'm not joking. I was just thinking about this. I'm like, damn, if I had like $5 million, I would build a studio and then we'd have like Lee's cooking show. I think that would be awesome. I know, seriously, because I love whenever you post like the cooking stuff on your website, it's like the best because unfortunately, I'm a dude. We've talked about this before. I don't have like patience for cooking, but I'm trying to do. You've encouraged me to do it a little bit more, so I'm trying. I'm trying, but I'm just like I don't know these like tips and tricks, pro tips.
Well, there's no wrong way to cook unless it's burnt. Great quote. Okay. Very simple. Okay. Here's what it is. It depends on your flavor palette and what you're really looking for. With asparagus, there's really three primary. There's a lot because you can salt it. The easiest way to do it mm-hmm. is to stick it in an oven and let it cook. Mm-hmm. I mean, what takes more complication than that? You simply make sure it's washed off, spray it with some olive oil, and it's going to have kind of a more that's going to give it more of a kind of roasting taste. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a lot of the taste from somewhat of the oven because it does always kind of.
I've never turned on this oven. This oven's never been turned on before. This is the first. I'm not joking. This is the first.
And I might not go with the oven.
Oh, do I have to do some work?
Sometimes, when you don't turn on an oven for a while, it's kind of like I don't know if you've ever.
Should I auto clean it or whatever?
I don't know if you've ever like not used the dishwasher for a while, and then you decide to run it, and when you do, your drain smells like rotten eggs. It's not exactly the same thing with an oven.
So
has it ever?
I can't have asparagus tonight.
I'm not telling you can't have asparagus. I'm saying, like, has the oven ever been used?
No, it's a
brand new oven.
Well, unless they like, I'm the first one to ever live in the apartment, so no.
Mm. Well, there could be kind of a metallic. Sometimes there's metallic things when you've never used a stove. That's all I'm saying. Mm. I'm not saying there will be. I'm just saying that it can be, but if you're nervous.
Do I turn on the auto clean thing? Will that do it? Will that fix it?
No, because that's just more, that's like chemical, or that's like heat on heat. No, just forget I said anything about the oven.
So what should I do? What do you do then?
Forget I said anything about the oven.
No, now it's going to taste.
What pan do you have to cook? Do you have a pan to cook the
asparagus? I got like a cookie sheet, yeah.
A cookie sheet. Okay.
Is it like some tin foil on it? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm not cooking. If someone said to grill it, but I'm using my George Foreman to cook some beef, so I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Here's very simple. Do you have some sort of olive oil spray?
I got Trader Joe's olive oil spray.
Okay. Spray it thoroughly with the olive oil and make sure it's coated.
Okay.
Do you have kosher salt or sea salt?
I have some sea salt, yes.
Okay, sea salt. Take some sea salt.
Okay.
Get nice heavy pinches.
Okay.
And sprinkle it generously. Generous because asparagus can be bitter and it can be bland.
Okay.
You want to cook it enough to take the bitter out of it, or else when you bite into it, it'll kind of take your you'll get that like kind of little tinge. You don't want that tinge of bitter. That's what you're basically trying to get out of the asparagus. You're trying to get the bitter out. Okay. That's why most people blanch it. With just cook it in water. That's again, it takes the bitterness out of it a lot easier than say oven roasting or steaming.
So they just boil it.
They boil it, yes, and then we'll follow it up with a saute in a pan mm-hmm. so that you can kind of add a little bit more flavor. So ultimately, this is how I like to cook asparagus. I like to blanch it, boil it, and then I'll drain it when it's almost done. I'll put it on a pan with olive oil and some seasonings. I'll saute it for a minute or two, and then I'll serve it because you get the bitterness out with the boiling, and then you kind of put the flavor in with like the sauteing. But that's a whole different thing and complicated. You just want to make sure that you cook it long enough to get the bitterness out in the oven. So if you're going to do that, I would say I'd personally go with like 450 and around 13 to 15 minutes mm-hmm. with the poke check. You just want to make sure. Yeah. You just want to make sure it doesn't get mushy.
Okay.
But you want it to be to make sure that there's not a lot of bitterness. You want it to be just
Firm
a
stocks.
Little. Yeah. You don't want it to be mushy, but you don't want it to be hard because the harder it is, the probably chances are more bitter it's going to be. You
That's
just don't
what
want
she
it
said.
Mushy. That's a whole different instruction.
So, okay, so I'm going to use my oven.
Yeah.
What, am I going to die? Rat.
No, I didn't. Just forget anything I said about the oven. Just put it out of your mind.
Is there going to be xenoestrogens? No, I'm just kidding. That's always a fun discussion. I still get emails about, you know, microwaving. Awesome. All right, so the other way would be to grill it, though.
Yeah, I mean, grilling, I mean, what doesn't taste good when you grill it? Seriously.
I don't think
George Foreman grills the same as grilling it, though. I'm gonna keep it real with
Sorry.
You.
Sorry, I don't, you know.
I'm just being honest. Down on the well, bayou. Because you're, it's when you grill something, you get the smoke, you get the flavor, and that it, you know, it essentially that's what makes it have the flavor.
I got
that it has.
Candles. I got a candle that smells like farmer's market, and I got pumpkin spice.
So tempted to tell you to do it, but I love it. Yeah, no, I mean, you can totally George Foreman grill it. I would just make sure to, you know,
I'm just gonna bake it. Yeah. What's the worst that can happen?
Look, middle rack, 450, 13 to 15 minutes.
Middle rack,
I think it should be fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, I will.
I worry about you putting it like on 450 and then putting it on the bottom rack. So I just wanted to make sure.
Come on, Lee.
Baby, you haven't used your oven yet.
You've been there for a while. Shit, what am I going to bake some cookies? I mean, shit.
Wow. Do you not love your dog? You don't bake your dog cookies?
I don't. No, I go and I get the Nutro so cookies. Cute. I get Nutro cookies, which is like $48 a box. So, dude, that dog is doing fine. He is healthy. I don't know if you've seen his coat lately, but.
He looks good.
I could check. I could, you know, check myself out in this coat. It's like
it's shiny.
It is shiny.
It's reflective.
It's like a mirror of sorts. All right. Well, now we're gonna wrap this up. So I hope you guys all join us for our live call-in episode next week, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's gonna be on TalkShoe, and you'll probably be able to. You'll see. You can probably just go to TalkShoe.com at 5 o'clock, and it will show you what shows are live, and we'll be under the fitness and nutrition section. Or you can just search for the Fitcast. Like, we literally still have an account on there. I believe it's just talkshoe.com/thefitcast.
Now, it's just real quick. Is this TalkShoe?
TalkShoe.com. Like a shoe that you put on your foot.
Okay.
So,
because I didn't know, so some people might not know who's listening.
Yeah, we originally did do this with Mike Robertson way back. And I'm just going to double check right now. Yeah, we're still up there. Like, you can actually look at, we did two episodes on there. We did two live episodes way back in the day, episode 77 with Mike Robertson. So you can just go to, and we're under the health section, excuse me. So what you can do is you can just go to talkshoe.com, look up the Fitcast in a little search keyword section. And we will be good to go. It should be fun. Well, I appreciate you guys, as always, for tuning in this week. Don't forget to subscribe through iTunes. We love it when you subscribe through iTunes. You can check us out at myself at facebook.com/KevinLarrabee. And then Lee Peel is just /LeePeel. And you can also find us at Twitter and the same kind of thing, which we appreciate. You can send in your questions to questions@thefitcast.com. But trust me, if you really want your questions answered, you should really come to our live call-in show. Cancel all your plans. Tell your husband or wife that, you know, you're not going out to dinner. You're staying in, and you're going to cook some asparagus. And
make us pay.
Listen to the Fitcast. Yeah, come on. Let's do something really good. I like talking to the Fitcast fans. It's kind of cool. So I'd love to talk to you guys. And Lee has it right when she says pick up the phone. We'll have that be playing on the rotation. And then I'll just pick up the phone. Call 775. Okay. Well, thanks.
If there's at least 100 people, I'll promise to do something that's embarrassing that Kevin will make fun of me of at least for the next 15 to 20 episodes.
Picture didn't happen. We'll see you next week. Okay, we're here in the off-topic discussion for episode number 210 or 208 or something like that.
You put 209 in the outline.
209.
But I don't know if that's relevant to anything.
I can open up the outline. So, Lee, what's up?
Not much. I am, well, I've been in a lot this weekend, so I've been watching a lot of movies.
Anything good?
A lot of classics. Let's see. Bebe's Kids.
Isn't that a cartoon?
Yeah, it's excellent. Which I love that. I saw that movie with Queen Latifah where she's the personal trainer or the physical therapist. Well, I enjoy anything with Queen Latifah. I saw that movie The Next 3 Days, which was fantastic.
The Next 3 Days.
Yeah, that's with...
with Russell Crowe?
Yeah. And his wife goes to jail and is accused of the crime she didn't do. And, like, basically the whole movie is him planning to get her out of jail.
Isn't everybody innocent?
Always. Don't you know? So, yeah, that was excellent. I really... That was probably my favorite thing that I watched. So, yeah, between that, I watched a lot of movies. And then I watched a lot of old episodes of Top Gear because it's my new TV show obsession.
Awesome.
The British version.
Of course. I mean, of course.
That's the only version to watch. I'm not even a car person, really. I am now. I'm becoming one. I'm starting to look at cars the way I didn't used to look at cars. You know, I walk past one now and it kind of catches my eye in a way I didn't used to.
Do you ever play any like that Forza game?
No.
It's like super detailed cars. It's like it's for Xbox. I bought it just simply because they had a downloadable content of the DeLorean. You could drive the DeLorean without the Back to the Future stuff on it.
No, really?
Yeah,
it's
really.
What's it called?
The latest one is Forza 3. It's Forza. It's like you can probably pick it up for $20 now.
Okay.
It's a lot of. I mean, if for the car enthusiasts out there, they if they're listening, they know what I'm talking about. It's supposed to be like the most realistic driving game out there. It's pretty crazy.
Because I love a good driving game. I even broke out the split second game. I never actually finished it.
That's a great game.
I finally finished the split second game and was playing that. I don't usually enjoy all driving games that I play because usually they're very like Cruising USA and I just get bored.
Yeah, Cruising USA, it's pretty bad.
I get bored with that whole, go around the track or go through like the fields and then you just keep going and then it's just, that's it. It gets boring. I get bored very fast. I like it when I can shoot things or hit things or it has some sort of purpose to it beside just trying to beat the other people in a boring way. So.
You know what? I'll give you one more suggestion. It's super cheap and very underrated, especially if you are a Sega fan. Sega's All-Star Racing or something like that. It is it's basically Mario Kart with Sega people. I am a huge Dreamcast nut. It's like the one thing that I've probably sunk the most money into in my life. And it has like tracks based on the games with music from the games. Like it even has music from games like Jet Set Radio Future, which has an amazing soundtrack. Like a great techno, like Japanese pop soundtrack. It's so weird. But I really recommend checking that out. Like I was blown away by the quality of the game. I it kind of was off my radar. And, if you like, a kart racer but you don't want to play on the Wii, or you're over 5 years old, it's worth checking out. or you don't want to like hold the controller out in front of you and drive. It's worth giving a look.
I'll check that out. I loved my Dreamcast. I was obsessed with my Dreamcast. I got it because of Crazy Taxi.
Why didn't you grow up next door to me?
I don't know. It's a shame.
It is a shame.
It's a shame.
Man, I'm telling you, one of the best... I still remember exactly what I did. I went into the electronics boutique on Saturday. Short story, my parents are divorced, so I used to hang out with my dad on Saturdays, and he'd pretty much take me wherever I want. Like, he's like... I'm like, oh, Dad, can we go to the mall? Like, we drive around or whatever, find stuff to do. And I went into GameStop and I saw the Dreamcast. And I knew about it. Like, I saw it in a Best Buy before it came out. but I wasn't too high on it. And I'm like, oh, it's $200. I couldn't afford it. And I saw this sign on the desk there at the front at the register that said, trade in your PlayStation in 10 games and get a Dreamcast in one game. And I'm like, Dad, I'm sorry what we did. I'm sorry we already drove here, but we have to drive back to the house and I have to pick up my PlayStation and get 10 games because I need this thing because I saw NBA 2K playing. And I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. So we ended up driving the 20 minutes back to my house and then another 20 minutes back to the GameStop. And that's like how cool it was Electronics Boutique back then, but that's how cool my dad was. He was like, all right, fine, we'll drive back to our house. And he even's like, all right, well, he helped me like buy a memory card for it, which at the time they were like $20, like they weren't cheap. So that was always a cool story. Like that was a I had to go to church afterwards, which sucked though, because I'm like, shit, I gotta like.
But you really wanted to play it, right?
I was like, I was thinking like, oh, maybe I should just make up that I'm sick. But that's when I was like, I was still super paranoid about religion back then. So I'm like, oh wait, maybe like, I'll get home and then the Dreamcast doesn't work.
It's gonna explode, yeah, or it's not gonna work or something.
God's gonna sabotage my Dreamcast because he'd do something like that.
Oh, totally. No, yeah. No, you can't duck out on church even for a Sega Dreamcast. Wow.
So I went to church and I read the manual while I was in church.
I can just see you sitting in a little pew.
Totally. I just couldn't wait to get home.
Oh my God, that's adorable. But, yeah. I loved the Dreamcast. I always thought it was one of the most underrated game systems ever. It was always my favorite.
You still have one? Do you have one?
Yeah.
Good. Because I was just about to order one on Amazon and have it sent you. They still have brand new ones.
No, I love it. I've gotten rid of a lot of stuff over the years, but I never got rid of my Dreamcast because awesome. It was just my favorite. And well, my brother gave me mine because my family couldn't afford it, and he had just gotten out of college. He got a scholarship to play college in baseball. And he had some sort of, it was like his biggest paying job to date. It was just one of those jobs where he got like a lot of good money. And so it was like present time. And it was, he got me the Sega Dreamcast. And I was just elated. I was so excited because I kept going up to the arcade game place or whatever to play Crazy Taxi. And I just loved it. Like me and my friends would go up there and do it. And he knew that. And so he got it for me for Christmas. Very cool. My brother got that for me, so I was like, oh, I'm never getting rid of that. And I didn't have a lot of games, but over the years I collected some, since they were like so cheap and used and whatnot. But I love that system. I thought the graphics on it were amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they really were ahead of its time, in my opinion. I thought they were great.
But while I noticed this, Lee, is there any way you can turn your mic up? I just noticed my headphones are turned up all the way because I was listening to music, and that's why you sound loud. And my
is
audio.
Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
So yeah, I still, man, that's still a great thing. And but I will balance this out a little bit. I've read 3 books in the last 5 days.
All right, which ones?
I read. Let me pull it up real quick. I'm partially cheating because they're audiobooks, but I've been like addicted to just. I don't know why. Let me just pull them up real quick in my iTunes thing. So the first is The Steve Jobs Way, which is by Jay Elliott, who was like Steve's secondhand man for like 20 years at Apple. So he had a lot of cool stories and kind of the mindset of how Steve worked. I had some good tips on leadership and the big part was, I've been like on an Apple kick. I've talked about this in the past, but when I get into something, I really get into something for a short period of time. Like I get obsessive over it, for like a week. And I got my iPad 2 on Monday. So I've been on a big Apple thing.
Is it as good as you thought it was going to be quickly?
I mean, it's thinner, it's faster. It's not, groundbreaking. If you already have an iPad, it's, stick with that. I would wait for the next one.
Gotcha.
I like it though. I mean, I need to have the newest, fastest, greatest thing. That's just kind of the way I am. But, so that book is outstanding. I think I listened to the first like 6 hours, in one day, and I even like stayed up till 1 a.m. listening to it. Like, I was just enthralled by it. It was incredibly, I mean, if you've watched Pirates of Silicon Valley, this is much more in depth and it's actually accurate. Unfortunately, that movie is not very accurate. And also, right after that, I went right into IWoz, which is Steve Wozniak's book, his kind of biography.
I like him.
Yeah, super weird dude, but he's obviously incredibly
he's quirky
bright
as hell, but he just seems like a really good guy.
Did you see him? I remember seeing him on the that Redhead's show.
Oh yeah, Life on the D-List.
Yeah, she was dating him for a while, and he's just like he's such a kid, and it's just
he's just the biggest dork. But he just seems really endearing. He seems really genuine. I don't know. There's something about him that I like. Like he's one of those. Seems like one of those guys that really did get into do what he do because he loves what he does and he actually wants to help people.
Well, so. If you're interested, I really think his book is, I think it's 10 hours total. But it does go pretty quick. And there's some things like the technical stuff where, you know, it's over my head. Like it's stuff that is, you know, talking about circuits and transistors and, you know, all this stuff that, you know, it is really interesting to kind of think about how he always tried to build things with the smallest amount of parts, above all else. He was about efficiency, which obviously we all used Apple IIs. Like if you're my age or older, you use an Apple II, like at least in grade school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big part of our lives. Like, you know, one of the coolest things is he was really into video games. He made the first home Pong system. And it was so crazy because the Pong game was hardware-based. It wasn't software-based. Like, he actually messed with, like, how the lines were drawn on the screen. Like, it was all, like, transistors that made the game, and it wasn't actual software burnt on a ROMs, which is just nuts. You know, like, the Apple II ended up being had a big focus on games, and they really did think about not the business person but someone at home, like what, like they made it very versatile. Like it actually had sound to it. If you played something like Oregon Trail, you even hear those little like boop boop,
yeah,
like
with the little gun rifle shooting out. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And the paddle, so it played Breakout, and he obviously, you know, invented and designed Breakout because he wanted to create a single player Pong game. So it's just, it was very fascinating. And then after that, I went into Live from New York because, again, Saturday Night Live is one of those things that I just have like I'm a big fan of the history of the show and the behind the scenes stuff. And I'm about 2 hours into it so far. And it is pretty awesome, pretty good. Pretty good so far, and again, it has some interviews with some of the actors on the show and stuff. And I don't know. I have a bunch of books downloaded, and even on my the Kindle and the iPad, I got Presentation Secrets or something of Steve Jobs, and then Design Secrets of Steve Jobs or something like that. Like again, like I said, I'm on a big
Apple kick. Yeah, I can tell.
And it's. Oh, it's just so weird. Like, they're all very good books, and if you have an Audible account, I really recommend listening to them and checking them out.
And I recommend Audible over iTunes because I've had it
a lot cheaper too.
Yeah, I really have. I've gotten some stuff recently. I'm listening to right now. I'm listening to Noam Chomsky, Hopes and Prospects. It's deep. It's intense.
What's that about?
It's basically a look at what's going on, or his view of what's going on in the country right now in the aspects of our relations with the Middle East and, you know, his thoughts about Obama and class wars. Mm-hmm. And it's just it is very, I think it goes, you know, anyone that knows Chomsky's work always knows that it's not so much that he's a leftist, he's a self-proclaimed anarchist, but not a chaos anarchist. Hmm. And I always enjoy his view of things, even if I don't 100% agree with everything that he says. He always has this way of breaking things down and into a point of view it really makes you think about why you think the way that you do. And, and how much to appreciate the United States, but also, you know, the areas that we can always improve. And it's just, it's always good. He's always one to make you think. I started reading his stuff actually about linguistics before I ever read his stuff about politics. Because I always found the art of, even though I can't talk, I always found the art of communication so interesting. But then I started, when I was around, I don't know, 16 or so, I started reading his work on politics and history and whatnot. And it's very fascinating. It very much makes you think. It's certainly, I don't think a lot of people who are more to the, not to get overly political, but on more of the right side of things, usually aren't a fan, but more independents and... left-wing and anarchist type people usually find it a little bit more interesting. But that's some cool stuff. On a business aspect, I just finished listening to Seth Godin's new book, Poke the Box, which I love.
Oh, cool. He does. I got that downloaded too.
Yeah. And his stuff is always good. It's always inspiring.
It's the same thing as usual. Like, I feel like all his books are basically the same message.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's a fair judgment to make. I do, because, I mean, what is most of his stuff anyway?
He pops like every 6 months, too.
How to empower yourself, how to be a leader, how to stay motivated. I think it's one of those things for me, from a psychology standpoint, I always feel like that I'm trying to keep breaking new ground. And I think every once in a while you just need a boost or a motivation, or to just know that maybe you're just not completely alone. Mm-hmm. In your thought patterns of trying to make change. And sometimes I think just that in itself, it's almost like, I always look at Seth Godin like it's kind of like going to an entrepreneurial anonymous meeting. And, you know, like, it's just, you sit around and you kind of, you get like your dose of inspiration, and you kind of are amongst the people that you're with, and all these like, oh yeah, I get that. You know, when friendship is born, when you say, oh yeah, me too. So it's that kind of thing that I always kind of get from Seth Godin. Not so much, oh my God, I never thought of that anymore. After Tribes and The Dip, mm-hmm. I stopped having a lot of those aha moments with this stuff. Like, Linchpin was kind of more preaching to the choir. And so I think it's Poking the Box, but still good. I'd still always buy his stuff. So, but I'm listening to that right now. But I'll have to get I just put the Steve Jobs way in.
Oh, you'll love it. I'm telling you, you'll be nonstop.
So, I am on it.
I also bought some shoes today, and I'm looking at buying a house.
A house? Wow.
A house, yeah.
The shoes, I mean, pales in comparison. The house, or are you going
That's
to be
like
living
the same
in
thing.
It? Are you going to be living in the area where you are now?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a little bit closer to the facility. I've come to the realization that I'd really love a backyard for Marty. So, and looking at the housing market, I would actually be paying, you know, if I can put $5,000 or $10,000 down, you know, I'm going to be paying actually less per month than I'm paying for rent right now for a mortgage. So it's something.
And it's yours? Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense. And I would actually have a place that's bigger. I can move out of the town that I'm in right now, which I don't like. So.
Wow.
Who knows? I mean, come on, guys. It's time to buy. Like, I'm paying like a substantial amount a month for rent, which in hindsight, you know, it's me jumping into things a little bit too quickly, so I'm not obviously going to be buying a house this week, but it's something that I'm looking into. And I bought some boat shoes, Lee. Come on.
Do you really bought boat shoes?
Yeah, you know.
Can I see pictures?
Yeah, I'll send you right now. I bought two separate pairs.
It's on your Facebook.
That's okay. One of them, but I bought I bought another pair from the friends at Zappos, who, you know, they always tell us to be very good with customer service. Read that book. Over delivering or something like that.
Something like that. I think I remember hearing something like that. Oh, okay. Hold on.
So I bought two pairs, and because, you know, I would like something to slip on, and Marty ate all my Nike Freeze. And those used to be easy to slip on, and I'm not gonna buy any more Nike shoes because we are sponsored by Adidas. So I'd rather just wait for the Adidas shoes to come into the facility and not buy.
All right, well, which color did you get? Oatmeal? Is this the color you got?
I got oatmeal, and I got the one that's on Facebook, the blue ones.
Wow. So. Well, that is just, look at these.
Yeah, look at their shoes, so.
Those are some.
Be able to put those on. I got some awesome.
You might as well start vacationing, you know, up in the. You really are New England, aren't you?
Yeah, and I know the Converse All-Star Slims, those are also, I have like three pairs of those, and those shoes are awesome, and they're like $45, $50 if you go to Nordstrom's. So those, if you like the Converse shoes, I would really recommend checking those out again. Converse All-Star Slims, they are sexy shoes.
Mm. I'm getting me a pair of the high top, knee-high.
Yeah, I just can't do the high tops. It's just not me.
Yeah, well, I'm getting the knee high, which I realize on you.
The knee high Converse.
It may not work for you.
The knee high All Stars?
Yeah.
You going to squat in those?
I don't think so. No, I think I'm just going to walk around anywhere I can in them. That's what I'm going to do. Because they're badass. They're just
the best
shoe ever. I think it's more of a girl
thing. Holy shit. Yeah, I'm looking at these. Wow.
Yeah, that's more of a girl thing.
Wow.
I would hope.
Extra high tops.
Yep, that's right.
You can pull that off?
I can. Yeah.
The XX high, there's like a leather one. Looks like.
Oh, really? Okay, well, maybe I don't know what you're looking
holy
at.
Holy crap.
Is there like, are there crotch tops?
I don't know. Depends how tall you are.
I got a longer legs and a shorter torso. Let's see what I can pull up. Nice. Oh, yeah, I'm totally getting these.
No, I don't know. All right, well, that's a 22-minute off-topic discussion. Finish out by saying I watched Independence Day last night. It's still good.
It's sad.
Don't you shoot that green shit at me.
I love that movie. It just makes me sad.
Why?
There was an unnecessary death.
Randy Quaid?
No, like I cared. I mean, you know, he died with honor.
Who?
I said, like I cared, he died with honor. Oh. It wasn't Randy Quaid. It was, the, you know, I don't want to completely spoil. By now, you should
spoil
really
15-year-old movie.
Well, you know, I hate it when people do that
the
to me.
The sequel coming out, Lee. So.
Is there really? They're making
supposedly they're working on it.
Wasn't that Battlefield Los Angeles?
No, it's called Independence Day 4-2. ID 4-2.
Okay. Well, anyway, I just hate it when the wife dies. So unnecessary.
Yeah, well, she came back in Battlestar Galactica and got revenge, didn't she?
You can't help yourself.
I didn't say who it was. Who hasn't seen Independence Day? It's like you. If people
no,
haven't
I'm
seen
saying
Jurassic
you can't
Park,
help yourself from
ass.
Making a Battlestar. Oh my God, reference.
I don't really like Battlestar Galactica. I thought the last two seasons were terrible. Terrible. Like Charles Barkley watched them. He said they're terrible. Battlestar Galactica is terrible. Now he's old. It's old Charles Barkley. Let's just end this shit later.
Oh, yeah. You're leaving that on.
Take it out back.
All right.